Hey, welcome to the List Film Podcast. I'm really excited. I sound really excited.
Don't you always sound really excited.
Yeah. For the new listeners, we are a weekly podcast where we pick a topic and a film genre, and then we discuss and list our top five favorite films or actors or what have you of that genre. Correct? Is that what we do?
I mean, I don't really know that we pick actors in a genre.
Yeah, I guess so.
Car chases isn't really a genre.
Yeah.
We basically, at this point, we just pick something we want to list.
Yeah. We're into lists.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should list the top five favorite lists. It's usually four hosts, but today we have two people missing. So your hosts today are Ricardo, myself.
Adam Scott.
Brandon Bennett.
There you go. And we have a special guest.
Brian Lally.
Brian Lally. Brian, what's going on with you?
We've got a lot of Brians. I'm sorry to jump in.
Wait, isn't Adam Scott a famous actor now?
Yeah. Well, not this Adam Scott.
Not this Adam Scott.
I did a movie with Adam Scott. He replaced a...
This Adam Scott?
No. The other Adam Scott.
We got to put a disclaimer.
He replaced a young, unknown actor at the time named James Franco.
Ooh.
And then Adam Scott stepped in.
What movie was it?
It was called... At the time, it was called Ronnie. Then it was Ronnie 2000. Then it was called The Killer Next Door.
Oh.
Mark Pellegrino plays the main heavy, and he probably maybe the best thing I ever saw him. He's fantastic in it. Hmm. So,
well, Brian, Brian's an actor, and you've probably seen him on alleged actor. You've probably seen him most notably L.A. Confidential, maybe Mi Familia.
L.A. Confidential is probably the biggest movie I've ever been in.
And then you hit Chucho's dad in Mi Familia.
I did. I billy clubbed Chucho's dad after he was shot.
Some cholos almost really beat you down in real life.
That is true. We're under the 4th Street Bridge in East L.A. on a Friday night, and they came after us. So
During filming,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you don't hit Chucho's dad. Isaiah Morales' dad.
Not without the right permit.
Yeah, no. Not with the permit, yeah. I think we were talking about this once. Wasn't your dad in the industry, too?
My dad was an actor, yeah. Yeah.
And is that how you got into it?
No, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I got into acting kind of late. I was 30 years old before I took my first class. And I was kind of bouncing around before then. When I was young, I did commercials and stuff, and my dad stepped in and said, "There will be no child actors in this family." And he kind of took it away from me, which is good because I tried to kill myself with no money. I couldn't imagine if I was making actor money.
Yeah.
So, he had worked with Patty McCormack, I think, in her first film after The Bad Seed. Mm. He played her father in a movie within the movie. And he had worked with a lot of child actors that he didn't like the way they acted in life.
Wow.
So he said to me, "No child actors in this family."
Wow. So it was prohibited.
It was.
Did any of your siblings take up acting at all?
I had one brother, no. He is an actor because he's a litigator.
He's the best type of actor.
Yeah.
I love hearing stories like that, though, whenever someone says they started doing something at 30. Because that just, you can always reset.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad. I have to say I do get jealous when I hear stories of like Al Pacino or people I met Ricardo at Playhouse West. People over there, they come in, 16 years old, and they're like, "I've always known what I wanted to do." And, I was like, "Wow, that is so cool." Al Pacino is like, "Yeah, I acted out everything in front of the family." That is not an Al Pacino imitation, but he talked about coming home from movies and he'd stand in front of his mother and grandmother and then act out the whole movie. When he got home, and I just thought that's cool to know that kind of thing, when you're young. But, I did what I did. I'm glad.
I'd like to see how Al Pacino's acting style translates into the 10 or 11-year-old Al Pacino.
It was before he got loud.
Have you seen the documentary they have running on the making of The Godfather?
No.
No.
Okay.
I wonder if it's on Blu-ray.
It's running right now. I don't know if it's out on Blu-ray.
No, I'm wondering if it's on the Godfather Blu-ray.
Oh.
As like a supplemental material.
Oh, I don't know.
Can I check that out?
He did that one about the Merchant of Venice.
Yeah.
When he was playing Shylock in Merchant of Venice. I remember that one.
He also when he was doing the play Henry VIII,
Becoming Henry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that was it or something like that.
Yeah.
It wasn't Regarding.
Yeah, Regarding Henry.
I liked Regarding Henry.
Regarding Henry is great.
I want to ask you about something. I think I worked on this movie with you too, on The Ape.
Yes. What about it?
How crappy was wearing that mask?
You know, I loved everything about it. I'm sorry to say, you know, I don't want to let you down, but it was a great experience. I loved wearing the mask because as soon as you put it on, for some reason, it took out your inhibitions. And so you could just do whatever you felt like doing. It's like being really drunk and you think people don't see you. You know, There's guys there's a guy in a bar and he just starts peeing in the corner because he thinks no one can see him. And everybody in the bar is like, hey, what's that guy doing peeing in the corner? So,
well, wait, why, for those who haven't seen it, why were you worried? Were you...
What do you mean?
What was the context?
What do you mean for those
mask?
Who haven't seen it? You didn't know I was coming in today.
No, Brandon just I asked Brandon last minute to show up last night, and he's like, "All right, I'll show up."
That's right. You didn't give him the cliff notes. on the Cliff Notes.
No, Brian did a movie with James Franco that he directed too, right?
It was James Franco's feature film directorial debut.
Yeah, and James played a writer who had, like, writer's block.
Spoiler alert,
guys. If you haven't seen it, turn it off and go see it and then come back.
I haven't seen it. Do I have to turn it off?
No. You have to endure me describing it. And then Brian plays this ape that shows up. That's part of his, like, James's subconscious and helps him. Actually, doesn't help him, right? It's quite the opposite. Kind of it fucks up his life. But at one point you're throwing fecal matter at him.
Yes. One take.
What was that?
Refried beans and water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mm. One take. And I told him, he said, can you do it? I said, I never missed on stage. We did it as a play before we did it as a movie. And every night I would hit him in the chest with refried beans. But I was giving a baseball toss kind of as I crossed across my body, and so some of the overflow would go into the people in the front row of the audience. And since James Franco was in the play, it was packed every night. And so when they would come in, we'd hand out paper towels, and they thought they were going to a Gallagher concert. You know, they're like, what's with the paper towels? So I had to do more of a highlight kind of over the straight overhead toss.
Cricket toss.
Yeah, cricket. There you go. I like cricket.
Speaking of Gallagher, I was once at dinner with Brian, and this guy that I didn't know him. Maybe, you know, like there was a big group, and there was a guy who we didn't know, and this guy kept talking about Gallagher, and I swear, like I overheard like something about Gallagher, and then I was talking to Brian for like half an hour or an hour, and I tuned back in to kind of see what they're talking about. Still talking about fucking Gallagher.
Gallagher's a heady subject. Right. If you want to dive into Gallagher, you can be in there for a while.
He was doing like half an hour on Gallagher.
He was. I think he was a fan of Cesar Chavez because whatever Cesar and his people could put down, Gallagher could knock it out of the park.
and then, so out of all the directors you've worked with, who's your favorite? What's your favorite experience?
I'd say working with James on his films has been my favorite. I really enjoyed. I did A Day on a Lost World, Jurassic Park, with Steven Spielberg, who I have to say at the time, if not this time, but at that time, was the biggest guy in the business, and he was the nicest guy in the world. And he was very friendly and very complimentary and encouraging. And he wasn't a micromanager. He told us the situation of what was going on, and then he said what he liked in it and what he wanted to keep. And he kind of formed us a little bit, you know.
Nice.
And then when lunch came up, Jeff Goldblum, who recommended me for the part, came down to watch me and some of the other guys who came from Playhouse West. Mm-hmm. We were cast in the part, and he had recommended all of us. And so he came in, and a guy named Kenny Moscow was there. And he and Jeff were friends. And I know Jeff pretty good. He's always been very nice to me, but I wouldn't say we're friends. Mm-hmm. But he and Kenny were friends. And so Kenny's like, where do you want to eat? And I said, I see Jeff and Spielberg sitting at a table. I said, we're going to eat with them. You sit next to Jeff, and I'm going to sit next to Spielberg. And he's like, no way. And I got my, you know, I got a tray off the truck, a plastic tray, like from the cafeteria. I'm shoving him in the back. I'm like, there's no way I'm not going to do this. When am I ever going to sit next to Steven Spielberg and talk to him? You know, if I'm not kidnapping him.
Yeah.
So, and so we went down and we sat down next to him, and he, I didn't let him eat. I talked to him for that whole lunch hour straight. I didn't shut up. And he talked to me about everything I asked. He talked to me about
Really?
Yeah, he would answer questions. We talked about movies. And it's funny because he said, so, you know, when she's having the baby in The Color Purple, you know, the steam's coming off and everything. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And he was explaining to me the whole scene. And my friend Kenny's across the table. And after lunch, he's like, you know what? He said, I'm so glad there's you sitting there because I've never seen The Color Purple. You know, I wouldn't know what to say. And I looked at him and said, I haven't seen it yet either, but there was no way I was telling Spielberg I haven't seen it. You know? And so, and honest to God, it's no BS. I went and rented it that night and I watched it. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, it is a good movie. And Oprah Winfrey is amazing.
Yeah.
And there was steam in that scene. This wasn't a test.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't a trick question.
And so, that was, he was so nice. You know, I also, there was a scene where Kenny wasn't looking. We were carrying this guy off after Pete Postlethwaite beats him up. And we almost run his nuts into a pole. And Spielberg, like, leaps. He's got these big calf muscles. He, like, leaps out from the video village and he runs over and he says, hold on. I go, Steven, you're not going to. He says, I have to. So he gets the guy a cup so he can run him into the pole. And I'm thinking, no way, you know, is this going to be funny? And so there's like 200 extras. You know, it's supposed to take place in like an outdoor cantina in Africa. And he's got 200 extras, a lot of Africans, women carrying whole things on their head. Mm-hmm. They're walking oxen. I mean, it's a really elaborate scene, which got cut out of the movie. And but it's on the DVD and the television version. And so I thought, well, this isn't going to be funny, of course. And so they run the guy's balls into the pole, and 200 extras laugh. And I go, that's why he's Steven Spielberg, and I'm not. He knew what people wanted to see. And anyway.
And it's the scene, aren't they recruiting Pete Postlethwaite or something?
Yes, that's it. Yeah.
How was working on L.A. Confidential?
L.A. Confidential was great. It was a great experience. And, you know, as I said before, Curtis Hanson was great in the audition. He'd been auditioning guys all day, and I kind of said to him, it was kind of a nonchalant kind of audition. Mm-hmm. And he was getting ready to cut me loose. I said, you want to see something? And he just smiled. He goes, yeah. I go, what do you want to see? He goes, show me whatever you want. You know what I mean? He was so excited that someone talked to him about, let's try to have some fun in this audition. And it was really cool. And then when we're on the set, I mean, the guy.
What did you show him? Did you just drop trow or something?
Yeah, I did. I dropped trow and I had an erection. He's like, I haven't seen that before. And it's funny that you say that because after he cast me, I was in Ben Frank's, which is now Mel's Diner. Mm-hmm. Ben Frank's was just a great. You know, not too different than Mel's Diner, but just a great old Hollywood restaurant. I was in Mel's Diner, and I come out of the stall in the bathroom, and there he is, you know, washing his face. And I'm like, hey, thanks for casting the movie. He's like, yeah, you earned it. I'm thinking to myself, better get out of here. It's kind of a weird setup. I'm about to start work with him.
It was before the movie actually filmed?
It was before the movie actually filmed.
Right after you got the part?
Right after I got the part, before it filmed, just about the time Kevin Spacey won the Academy Award for Usual Suspects, which made it a bigger deal. Danny DeVito hadn't been doing much. No one knew who Russell Crowe was.
Yeah.
I thought it was an independent movie. I honestly did. Yeah. They wouldn't give us the scripts. You know, they didn't give day players the scripts. I was on it like 6-8 days,
yeah.
You know, and they didn't give us the scripts. And I thought it was a really small deal. And obviously we found out what it was. But Curtis Hanson is the kind of guy who knows what he wants. And based on the audition, everybody had the same audition. And based on how you did on the audition, what he saw in you, he gave you so many scenes. And I had like 6 scenes, and several of them got cut out. You know, and that's a great part about being me and not Kevin Spacey, because I was about to do this scene where it was just all about me, focused on me, mm-hmm. Jones, and for when they pull up with the booze. Yeah. And so they're setting the thing up. Someone says, what time is it? And they say 11:30. It's 11:30 at night. And they go, what time is 11:30? 11:30. Okay, sorry, Brian. And then they just split.
Really?
It was over. You
know,
it was too late to shoot Brian Lally's scene.
They're like, we're done.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey had just won the Academy Award. So, Brian, we're going to go get some more Kevin Spacey.
Wow.
And a couple things like that happened where they called me down, which was good for money-wise. They'd call me down. Hey, where are you? I said, you said I wasn't working today. We'll get down here. And I'd run down. We were shooting in Venice at the Gay and Lesbian Center. That's what it is now. on Venice Boulevard. And so we'd run down there, and I'd run down there, and they'd put me in makeup, and I'd stay until, like, 2 in the morning. They'd say, hey, sorry. I'd say, it's okay. Which, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, where are you?
Still getting paid.
Yeah.
Still eating really good food.
And Kevin Spacey was taking pictures with everybody. I wish I would have got a picture of him. I was trying to say, yeah, he's no better than me. But
and now you said you enjoyed James the most, I guess, as the experience of working with him. What's your favorite project that you've done with him?
It was probably The Ape.
Yeah.
I'd say we had so much fun. We did the play together. We collaborated. So that was the fun. You know, we just did Child of God together.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing As I Lay Dying in September.
Which is a Cormac McCarthy novel, right?
Yeah, Child of God, yeah. And As I Lay Dying is the William Faulkner novel.
Okay.
So we're going to do that next month.
Who's in Child of God? Isn't it like Tim Blake Nelson in that? And
Tim Blake Nelson is in it. He and Jim Parrott play the cops, and Scott Hayes, who... you know, was an unknown until now. I think he does a really great job in it. He plays Lester Ballard, the necrophiliac serial killer.
Interesting.
Spoiler alert.
That's interesting because the Cormac McCarthy is pretty big. I dig his novels.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then what? Didn't you have? I think I was there when you filmed your scene for Good Time X. Where you play the? Was it the pothead?
Oh, are you? Wait. No. Which? What are you talking about? In the...
In Good Time Max?
Good Time Max. We were supposed to be... Well, yeah.
That thing got cut out too.
We were smoking drugs. You just have the back of my head. You have my speech, but the back of my head, so I must sound better than I look. So, and then he had me do a voiceover of Lieutenant Lally. He had me say, when they bust the brother at the end. He was high while he's a surgeon who was using drugs while he was so.
And then didn't he do an art project like for like a museum with like this weird art piece? Didn't you do the voiceover for that too?
I've done
what was he do? He's always doing some weird shit with like
I art. Did three art pieces with him this year. So I did one where we did a shot for shot remake of a 1955 public service announcement. So it's called Sid Davis 13. That's not the Sid Davis was the director. Did a lot of those things in the 50s. Public service announcements. How kids, mother died. I played the evil stepfather. So, you know, a couple shots of me without my shirt.
Interesting.
Not a lot of people requesting that. So.
But you have done Full Frontal without being asked.
I've done a lot of full anal. No. Full rear.
Wow. Yeah. All right. So should we get into the lists? It's an interesting episode today because we're just randomly talking about five random movies that we want to talk about.
Let's talk about movies.
Okay.
All right?
Right.
We'll start with Brandon, and then we'll go this way, just so we put Brandon on the spot.
Okay.
Brandon.
Okay.
Bennett. What's the movie you want to talk about first?
Well, I was thinking, because usually we're dealing with genre and stuff, so
yeah.
I thought maybe I'd think of some movies that maybe, I don't know, that I really like, some that maybe some others might really like, and some that others traditionally probably really hate. And one of those would be, what is it, I don't know the year, 1992 maybe? Sylvester Stallone vehicle, Oscar.
Ooh.
The John Landis film based on a French movie. I can't remember what the name of the French film is called.
Probably Oscar.
Le Oscar.
Yeah, Le Oscar.
It's 91.
91?
Ooh.
Okay.
Way off, man.
But so, I love this movie. I think it's zany. I think it's an awesome, like, just straight up screwball comedy, and it's absurd, it's silly, it's ridiculous, and I actually think Sylvester Stallone is really good in it.
It's funny that I've just been on a Stallone kick because Expendables is coming out, and I've been kind of
Expendables 2,
part Dukes, and
they weren't so much, I guess.
Yeah, and they weren't expendable at all, I guess. And I started rewatching all these Stallone movies, and then right now I'm up to First Blood, Rambo: First Blood Part 2.
I love that. Are you going in chronological order? Or?
I'm trying to.
Okay,
trying to. Yeah, but Oscar, comedy. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And was this his first thing? This was before Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot, right?
That's a good question.
Oscar is before Stop Where My Mom
Will Shoot. It's before Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot.
99% sure.
And just throw it, give us the quick premise. What is it?
Gangster tries to go straight. What's his name?
His name is an Oscar?
No, it's not. Oscar is the name of the chauffeur that the whole thing kind of centers around, that his daughter was having a fake relationship with.
Is Chaz Palminteri in that?
Yeah, Chaz Palminteri plays...
Angelo Snaps Provolone.
Yeah, Angelo Snaps Provolone.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's the three main things. You've got just the screwball Italian mobster comedy, and then Provolone, which tells you how sincere it treats its subject matter. But Marissa Tomei, Chaz Palminteri, Harry Shearer, and I'm trying to think, Isabella Rossellini plays his wife.
Wow.
It's just bizarre. It's a weird movie.
I remember seeing this and not liking it.
Who plays his mom?
Oh, who plays
Estelle Getty.
That's Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot.
I think that's who it is.
No, it's in Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot.
Isn't she in all of them? Isn't she just
his mom? She just plays everybody's mom.
She's like Hitchcock in all Stallone's films. She just pops up every now and then.
When did you see this?
When I was a kid.
But have you seen it recently?
Yes. Yeah, I rewatched it recently.
Because I'm always curious of like movies when you saw when you're younger than rewatching them to see like, that movie doesn't hold up. I remember it being a lot better than
it was. That happens 99% of the time.
Yeah, I remember that was Citizen Kane.
When I was 7, I loved Citizen Kane.
But then now
I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, you're like way off.
Yeah.
Adam?
Hold on. This is an interesting run of movies he's got around Oscar. So I'm going to start back to the first movie that I liked before this run, really. So it goes Rocky IV.
Yeah.
And then he does Cobra, Over the Top, Rambo 3, Lock Up, Tango and Cash, Rocky 5, Oscar, Stop Where My Mom Will Shoot.
Wow.
And he's like, cliffhanger.
Whoa. So he was like, he deviated to like, I'm kind of done with my career. I don't want to do any more good movies. And then he came back with Cliffhanger, because Cliffhanger was really good.
Well, okay, you
Tango
say that.
Tango and Cash? Come on, Tango and Cash.
Lally, we'll plead the fifth.
We got negative Cliffhanger, negative on Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger?
Yeah, I love Cliffhanger.
Everybody in Cliffhanger was awful.
It's still an awfully awesome movie. Oh,
God. You don't like John Lithgow having it up?
No. I love John Lithgow. Did you see him in Dexter?
Yeah.
He was unbelievable.
Yeah, that dinner scene in Dexter, without saying anything about the scene, but that dinner scene is amazing.
Oh, my God. He was unbelievable. It was the best he had done since he had his penis removed in The World According to Garth.
Janine Turner at the height of her Northern Exposure fame. And beauty before she went crazy conservative.
Didn't say she wasn't good looking in it. Still almost still buff.
Michael Rooker's in that, too.
Michael Rooker?
Michael
Rooker!
Yeah.
What rapper is that? Isn't that Leon?
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, saying that he forsake his career, I mean, if you look at his career as a whole, there's a lot of really bad movies.
Yeah, but just alone.
Because, I mean, after Cliffhanger, he does, like...
He does Daylight.
That was
after I love Daylight.
Daylight was
good? I love Daylight.
Cliffhanger, Demolition Man.
I like Cliffhanger way better than
I love Daylight, man. I thought he did such a good job in that. I did not like Cliffhanger. I thought Daylight, he did good in it. Thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed the movie. That was really good. I went by myself to see it, and I was like, well, you know, I like Sylvester Stallone, always have. And I said, I got to go down there, and I got to check this out, and just walk through it. I said, I'm glad I came. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. What about Copland? When did that come out?
Copland is great. That
Copland was good. I rewatched that recently because I couldn't remember if I really liked it or not, but it was great.
97.
Yeah.
I rewatched Copland because he's doing that director, James Mangold, is doing The Wolverine.
He's doing?
The Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
Well, he also did Walk the Line. But then he also did Night and Day. That had nothing to do...
Interrupted.
Yeah. That was good. Had nothing to do with Night or Day.
Yeah. But to bring it back to Sloan for a second, we can all agree on Demolition Man.
I love Demolition Man.
Demolition Man, his wife was played by Annie Fitzgerald, and she had a lot of good scenes, especially when he was being frozen. And then she got to the premiere,
and
no one had told her
oh.
that she was not in it.
It's funny. I was just listening to an old interview and with Clooney, and he talked about that, how that happened with Adrian Brody in The Thin Red Line.
Really? Mm-hmm.
How he was a lead in the movie, in the script. He had all the parts. And then when he went to see the movie, it was James Caviezel that was now the lead. Wow. And all of Adrian Brody's scenes were kind of cut out, and no one told him.
Yeah. See, I heard it happens that, I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, under the, you know, below the line actors, but if you get cut out, you are not necessarily invited to the premiere.
Really?
Like, I don't know how much you can illuminate me on that, but like Adrian Brody, I'm sure, you know, is especially being featured through a lot of it anyway. But, you know, if you do, you know, 5 or 6 scenes, you would probably be going to the premiere.
Well, you know, I don't know that you get invited to the premiere a lot with the main cast if you're day players. That's my experience.
Yeah.
A lot of times I don't get invited to the cast and crew party. So
they're like, he's going to drop his pants again.
I hear people from, I hear other people get cut out. They're like, hey, where were you at the party? I was like, no one called me.
I was at home.
That's it.
All right. Adam, is there anything else you want to say about Oscar? I remember not liking it, and I've stayed away from it.
It opens up with a claymation, like Pavarotti actor singing Barber of Seville, Figaro.
did we figure?
Kirk Douglas plays his dad.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Who plays the mom? Or was I thinking about?
I don't think his mother is in it.
Yeah. Thinking, Stel Getty in Stop My Mom.
I mean, Yvonne DiCarlo is in it.
Yvonne DiCarlo.
Yeah, as like the
Lily Munster.
Lily Munster.
Yeah.
That's right. All right, Adam. What movie do you want to talk about?
A random movie. All right. Well, I'm just going to talk about something I just saw.
What did you just see?
I just saw God Bless America.
Ooh.
The Bobcat Goldthwait movie, which it's a really good thing. It came out months and months ago.
Because
there's a shooting in a theater in it.
Yeah.
It's a really, really dark. It's like Lost in Translation, but they kill people.
Mm.
It's this weird, dark indie romance, but they're just upset about the state of America, and they just kind of both go on this killing spree.
I love Bobcat. I love World's Greatest Dad. I really enjoyed it. I thought Ron Williams was really good in that. And I started this movie, and I know it just came on Netflix, and I just had to do something else, but I stopped it. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. And one of the Murray brothers is in
Joel.
It, right? Joel Murray.
Yeah. He was on, like, Dharma and Greg, and
yeah.
I mean, he's in stuff with his brother.
Mad Men.
Yeah.
So you like it? Recommend it?
I did. Well, I don't necessarily recommend it to everyone. I'm sure some people
will be offended.
Well, yeah, I'm 99% sure that half the people who watch this movie are offended.
Oh, wow.
Because it's a tough movie to watch, but I enjoyed it. It's very dark, and it has some funny moments. It gets a little bit preachy.
Yeah.
Takes a little while to get started, but, I mean, Joel Murray and the main... what's her name?
The young actress.
Yeah.
Right? Yvonne DiCarlo?
Yvonne DiCarlo.
I wish.
Estelle Getty?
Lily Munster?
No, not quite. Something Barr.
Roseanne Barr?
Not Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
Tara Lynn Barr.
Tara Lynn Barr.
I mean, she could be related to Roseanne. It's the same spelling.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess you recommend it to 50% of the people.
50%? Probably even less. Like, maybe a third of the people will enjoy it. A third of the people will be offended, and the other third will just stop watching it.
Excellent.
It came out months ago.
Yeah.
I'm from Aurora. You can go see the movie.
Yeah. Whoa. You're good? You stamp your approval.
Yeah. I give my stamp of approval.
Okay.
Aurora, Illinois?
Colorado.
Isn't that where... Wayne's World was Aurora, Illinois.
Yeah, right. We were always jealous of that.
All right, Lally, what's your first, your number five pick?
My number five pick?
Yeah.
Oh boy, I didn't know if we were going backwards. I want to talk about my favorite year. Do we all know my favorite year?
Peter O'Toole.
Yeah,
Peter O'Toole.
Yeah. That's a great movie.
Mark Lynn Baker.
Yeah,
the story of. The show of shows. You can tell I don't get out much. I'm just any bumping noise you hear out there is me just knocking the heck out of the mic stand.
Well, good. You took the bullet for the rest of us.
That's
then.
It.
Yeah,
I did. So I just loved the movie. I just thought it was great. I thought Peter O'Toole was great. I thought Mark Lynn Baker did at least as good a job as Matthew Broderick did in Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
You know, for a guy who, I guess he'd been doing some stage work, but just to, you know, to break the fourth wall, to face the camera and do all that dialogue, just rapid fire. I liked it. I liked everybody in it. I liked Joseph Bologna as the Sid Caesar character. And, you know, and they say Sid Caesar was really, really a tough guy. You know, he was really a strong guy. He talked about him. You know the old cars had wind wings, the little thing opened, the vents that opened. You could hang your cigarette out there. They talked about some guy was talking shit to him on the street one day. He was just, Caesar, you're not funny. And talking about it. He went over, he reached his hand, and he was trying to pull the guy out of the wind, wing in the car, that he was really, really strong.
Well, that was kind of like the at the time, that was like your AC. You just popped that little thing open.
Yeah, you did. You did. That's all they had.
Well, he created the type of work environment to spawn at least two highly successful projects about what it was like working under Sid Caesar. That and then Laughter on the 43rd floor? 23rd floor. Laughter on the 23rd floor.
Uh-huh. And I believe Richard Benjamin directed both. He directed this. And I think he directed Laughter on the 23rd floor. And I love the Basil Hoffman, I believe. I haven't seen the movie in a while, but I believe it was Basil Hoffman, the character actor who played the Woody Allen character, who wouldn't say anything to Sid Caesar or anything. He had to go through someone else. He had to whisper it to him, then they would repeat it because he wouldn't talk to anybody. So I thought that was funny. And, you know, of course, my favorite line, probably everybody's favorite line is it's not even my favorite line now that I think about it, is when Peter O'Toole says, "I'm not an actor, I'm a movie star." He didn't realize there was a live audience out there, and he's like, "What are those people doing here?" And that wasn't my Peter O'Toole impression either. And because they all sound the same, and then and they're like, "Yeah, that's the audience." He's audience, and he freaks out because he's drunk. So he says, "I'm not an actor, I'm a movie star," and he freaks out and he leaves, but he ends up coming back because it's a movie, and they have to have a happy ending. But they're my favorite. He goes into the bathroom. It's a ladies' bathroom, and the costume designer for the show is like an Edith Head character. Edith Head, the 8-time Academy Award-winning costumer.
She gives good wardrobe.
Yes, thank you very much. So Carrie Fisher now lives in her house. And she's in there in the bathroom. Peter O'Toole's drunk. He walks in and she says, "This is for women only." And you can hear the zipper goes down. Zip. And he says, "So is this. But every once in a while, I have to run a little water through it."
wasn't there a Sid Caesar character also in Ed Wood? I think so.
Was he supposed to be Sid Caesar?
It felt like a little Sid Caesar-ish. Where they go on the show with Bella.
Orson Welles.
He kind of reminded me more of Joey Bishop than Sid Caesar.
Yeah. Because that actor played Joey Bishop in another movie. Yeah.
Who's that? Was that what's his name? The comedian who played Joey Bishop in the Rat Pack?
Yes. Yeah.
Bobby Slayton?
Yes, Slayton, Bobby Slayton. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Exactly him.
His line is, "It's the easiest job in the world is to be a sketch artist in Hong Kong." What did he look like? 5'5" with a haircut like Mo.
It is pretty easy. Makes really hard work of the police force there, I guess. We're horrible guys.
Speak no laughing.
It's Bobby Slayton. It's got nothing to do with me.
And was he the? I shouldn't have even said anything. The wild dog of comedy.
Yeah,
what's his moniker he gave himself?
Yeah, I think so. I think
something like that.
He's still around.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Yeah. All right. For my number five, I picked of my random movies. I picked Igby Goes Down.
Oh,
from 2002,
a Jeff Goldblum movie.
Jeff Goldblum movie, and the director I think at one point went to Playhouse West.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Who directed it?
The director is Burr Steers. It's funny because he went from this movie, which I thought was amazing, and then the next movie he did was 13 Going on 30, the Zac Efron movie, which I didn't hate.
I lied to you. You mean 17 Again?
17 Again.
17 Again.
Because 13 Going on 30 is...
Yeah, that. It's the same movie. They're all the same movie.
They're all the same.
Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
17 Again was really good, though.
Yeah.
They go in the other direction.
I'm okay. Sorry.
One goes to the future, and the other one
goes to the past.
Shrinks.
Yeah, Benjamin Button disease. But yeah, I thought this was a really cool movie. I love Jeff Goldblum in this. He plays like a great jerk, and everybody's great. What's her name? Claire Danes is in it.
Susan Sarandon. Susan Sarandon. Is amazing.
My favorite line is, he's like, do you have anything to say for yourself? He's like, chode. But yeah, this is it Rory Culkin? Which one?
Yeah.
Kieran Culkin.
Rory's
yeah.
the younger one.
Yeah. Which yeah. also comes out in this movie. He plays the younger...
He plays the younger Kieran.
Younger Kieran, yeah. Yeah.
The younger Igby.
Yeah. And Susan Sarandon. It's just a great, great movie all around.
Jared Harris steals every scene that he's in.
Yes.
I like when Igby is yelling up to get the keys and he throws them and it hits Igby at the eye. And afterwards he says, duck.
That's right. Did you see this, Brian?
I haven't seen it in a long time. I don't remember too much about it. And I need a cigarette break. No, I'm kidding. I don't smoke.
You smoke, don't you?
Not anymore.
No. You're done. All right.
For now.
That Brandon. Just makes me think of Bill Pullman's drawer full of neatly organized cigarettes in the movie.
No, oh, that's right. He's
the dad who goes crazy.
Crazy, yeah. Bill Pullman. He's. I feel like he's always gone crazy.
He's good at crazy.
He did his own Batman kind of voice box when he was playing the president in Independence Day. Bill Pullman.
Playing it. Well, he was kind of. He kind of started the Batman voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, early on.
He just puts the lav, like, right here at the base of his neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I someone was telling me a story that their friend, I think it was Michelle. Well, somebody was telling me a story that their friend was at a bar, and Bill Pullman happened to be at the bar, and he was literally watching him try to pick up on a girl. And the girl didn't go for it. You know, she kind of left, and he was kind of bummed out. And he turned over and he's like,
I want to see sad Bill Pullman at the bar.
This guy who somehow we know said, he's like, fuck it. You're a Lone Star, man. Fuck her. Fuck her. And he turned over and he's like, you're right. I am fucking Lone Star.
Yeah.
So I guess he cheered him up like that.
Is that where Chris Cooper got started, Lone Star?
No. Lone Star is the character.
In Spaceballs.
In Spaceballs.
Oh, in Spaceballs.
Yeah, yeah.
That you're talking about the movie Lone Star.
But Lone Star is a good movie.
Yes.
It's who's the director
Matthew,
of that?
Oh, well, I was going to say Matthew McConaughey's in it, right?
Matthew McConaughey's in it. It's, damn it. He's a really famous director. Does a lot of independent stuff. Brandon, you're number four. You're number four random. Which could be your number one. Because it's random.
Yeah, I mean, this is in no particular order, I guess. Except for maybe number one. But, I don't know, continuing off of maybe the Mel Brooks thing, we were talking about movies as kids that we enjoyed, that we still enjoy today, and there are very few movies, especially comedies, that you laugh at every joke, and it's never dissipated. And The Producers has to be still my favorite comedy. Maybe Trading Places as well, but The Producers is still just... I never not laugh at everything in The Producers. And I could not be more thankful that Mel Brooks took LSD... out of the musical, because he was just like that. That was Dick Shawn. I can't, like, there's nothing I can do about that.
Did you say this is your favorite Mel Brooks?
Yeah, it would have to be my favorite Mel Brooks.
Really?
Oh yeah, by far.
Interesting.
Either that or Blazing Saddles.
Yeah,
would be the popular choice. But I got it was his first and his best.
Yeah. What now? Why isn't Mel Brooks making movies now?
He's very very old.
Yeah.
It's Is hard, that really it?
It's Is hard it? To do He's a lot old, of things when you're very, very old.
He's making a fortune on musicals.
Yeah, that's true.
Did you see him and Dick Cavett?
Oh, that HBO thing.
Yeah,
that was great.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, that was really good.
Unbelievable. Those guys are just funny. And him and Carl Reiner.
Yeah.
Just funny. And Carl Reiner's like 92.
Is he? I mean, I guess I say that they're very, very old. But then you see him and Dick Cavett all together. And it's, you know, it's like it's 1972.
Yeah.
And they're in prime time. I mean, they're great. He's really super fast. He was great on Curb Your Enthusiasm when they did the whole producers thing, where then, like, the finale.
Sorry, I hit on my app, my IMDb app, a trailer started playing.
Now, Dick Shawn died on stage, correct?
Did he?
Yeah. He died on stage, and they thought he was joking. He had a heart attack.
Oh, really?
And then, in a part, it was going into the intermission, and he fell down. And he was like, and they're like, Dick, you're so funny. And he was dead when they came back.
What?
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
All right, so if you can just do what you do. I can't do that here, baby. That's why they put me away.
Now, did you see the remake of The Producers?
The movie of the musical.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was awful, but that makes sense because it was like, it, well, not only was it, and I saw the musical and the musical was really great. If only because the meta level of it, of seeing Springtime for Hitler, like performed on Broadway, was very, very cool. And I thought the musical was really good, but the movie of it was, I mean, that had to be the 1700th time they've performed that.
Wow.
And for the movie, they would have had to do it over and over and over. So like what kind of, I just felt like there was zero passion in any of it. Like it was just so old hand at that point.
The thing to me about that is Zero Mostel was crazy.
Yeah.
He was insane.
Literally.
And then I love Nathan Lane. I really do. I enjoy him on Letterman all the time. I think he's a very talented guy. Zero Mostel, it was insane. And you could see it in his eyes. I mean, and how are you going to recast that?
Yeah.
I mean, Manson's in jail.
So. Yeah, and it's like, because when you watch the musical, you see, like, I didn't see it with Matthew Broderick in it. I can't remember who. Stephen Weber. That's right. Wow. Stephen Weber took his role. And just to see him do, you know, the panic attack with the blue blanket, just trying to mimic Gene Wilder. It just comes off so unsettling.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zero Mostel, just insane. Dick Shawn, insane. Still, when Springtime for Hitler plays in the theater, it's still one of the best. The women come to the topless women with the pretzels on. Winter for Germany. I mean, the whole thing is amazing. It's just unique because I laugh at every joke just as I did, and most things have totally faded with time in that regard, but not that.
Yeah. It's funny, we've talked about two actors who I always think, are they still alive? And one of them was Peter O'Toole. Mm-hmm. I always think, is that guy still alive? And Gene Wilder is another
one. Gene Wilder's alive.
They're both still alive.
Peter O'Toole just retired, and it's very, God, it's just disappointing. I mean, he is just, you know, he's just been around.
And supreme forever. Alcoholic, right?
Yes. Like, I believe he quit drinking. Unless he started again many years ago. But Gene Wilder, I don't know why he doesn't do anything. But best monologue ever, Gene Wilder reading the contract to Charlie in Willy Wonka.
Yeah, yeah.
With that passion, spitting and snorting. And you know, he's unbelievable. Yeah. He is unbelievable.
And the story about the tumble when he's first introduced, how that was all Gene Wilder's idea. When he does out with the cane and then trips and does the somersault.
Yeah.
I guess that was his idea. Oh, that was right. Lettersofnote.com is where I found that. And it was a letter Gene Wilder wrote to the director where he said, because then at that point, you'll never know if he's lying or not.
Ooh. Interesting.
You'll never know if he's honest for the rest of the movie after he does that. And it was great. And it's perfect. He was totally right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great. He did a couple murder mystery
movies.
He's
no Johnny Depp, but...
Oh, yeah, I remember.
God, I am going to hit you so hard from across the table.
He's no what? I must have
Johnny Depp.
Oh, no.
It's true. He is no Johnny Depp.
He is not
way
yet.
Better. No, he's not yet.
Not
no,
yet.
He's
yet.
Way better than Johnny
yet.
Depp.
Yeah. He has time.
You're right.
Yeah. He has time.
But no, what...
Those A&E murder mysteries.
Oh, yeah. He did a couple A&E murder mysteries that he wrote that were really good. He plays a Jewish theater director in the 30s.
Really?
And he gets involved with these mysteries. And they were very, very cool. Yeah, yeah.
I got to check these out.
Yeah, they're in the early to mid-90s.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you can find them on DVD or somewhere.
I think they were after he had that TV show briefly.
Oh, what TV show? I don't know.
He had some TV show where he played like an ad executive or something.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, it was like Going Wild, wasn't it?
Something Wilder.
Something Wilder.
Oh, okay. Well, Murder in a Small Town.
Murder in a Small Town.
And then I don't remember the name of the other one. But yeah, Something Wilder, I remember vividly because there was an episode with Alice Cooper.
Interesting.
That long-awaited Gene Wilder, Alice Cooper.
Did Alice Cooper have makeup on?
In the end, it's because they had to pitch something, and so Gene Wilder and Alice Cooper both came on in makeup.
Oh, wow. God, that is like the classic horrible sitcom.
Adam, what is your number four?
Shit, I just had it. Oh, okay. So all this talk about Carl Reiner made me want to go with something...
Carl Reiner-y.
So I'm going with Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid from
1982. Oh, nice. Great. Great idea for a movie. Great execution for a movie. I'm sorry, it's your movie. You go ahead.
No,
I just really enjoy it.
Go for it. I love when other people have things to say about it, too.
Yeah.
It's, just the way, the genius of the way that they intercut the footage that they've shot with footage from the actual film noir movies that they're paying homage to is it's just so much fun to watch. Mm. And it's fun to see how much that they love the same genre. And just watching Steve Martin and Carl Reiner and everybody ham it up, it's hilarious. And I can't even remember all the, I don't even think I've seen all of the film noirs that they have in there. I know they do like Double Indemnity, and they do Key Largo, I think, and they
yeah,
like Gun Crazy, and
yeah, they're just all of them, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. Carl Reiner's directing, and he's in it. I feel like he plays a couple of roles, but most famously, Field Marshal von Kluck.
Wow, that's right.
And it was written by Carl Reiner and George Geip. I think, hope I'm saying that right, and Steve Martin. I think it was, so. This was after The Jerk.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just, they work so well together, and seeing Steve Martin play the what's front, the Barbara Stanwyck role,
yes,
from Double Indemnity, it's hilarious. Cutting it together with Fred McMurray in the grocery store when they're planning the murder, it's so good. It's just such a fun. If you haven't seen Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, you should check it out.
Well, yeah.
And What has Steve Martin been up to? I mean, he's not been funny on film for a while, I feel.
He doesn't have to be funny.
He's a writer.
That's the thing that I did pick up his new book. I don't know what it's called. Brian's having a ball with that mic.
He's doing the remix.
And bluegrass. He's playing his bluegrass.
That's right.
Get on the mic. Get on the mic, Mike.
So your next film, Brian.
You know what? Just after he was... reading some of his description there, I just decided to talk about Being There.
Ooh.
I was addicted and staying up all night watching clips on YouTube of Peter Sellers. The man is so talented, it makes me embarrassed to be an actor. He is, he's funny, he's dramatic. And he would just tell stories. I could just sit there and listen. He'd just tell old jokes. And, I'm just so sorry he died so young. And Being There is just a great movie, and it's kind of like the opposite of all the physical comedy you can do from, Dr. Strangelove, with the arm that will never stop, heiling Hitler to the Pink Panther or anything, all his films. And then Being There, that where he says so little.
Yeah.
And he's just great. And Shirley MacLaine, who I know she's won awards and she's an acclaimed actress, but I don't think people talk about her enough, because anything that she's in is phenomenal. And she's right there. And I just watched, because of her, I just rewatched Terms of Endearment a couple weeks ago because of what I know of her in life and who she plays in that movie is, it's just a great characterization. My father worked with her in a film, I think it was called All in a Night's Work. Her and Cliff Robertson were the leads in 1962,
wow,
I think it was. But he had, he really liked her as an actor. And, so I thought that was a great movie.
Peter Sellers is one of those chameleon guys, mm-hmm, that you have. Most actors, when you watch a performance, you can kind of get a feel for maybe what they're like as a person. But Peter Sellers, you have no idea what it's like to hang out with Peter Sellers, mm-hmm, watching any Peter Sellers performance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just bizarre. I mean, Dr. Strangelove being the prime example in one movie of the three, just totally differently hilarious characters.
He was, I think they were at Royal Albert Hall for some big concert, whatever it was back then. And, the queen came in and she was wearing her crown or whatever she wears, a tiara, whatever the thing was for the big event in Peter Sellers. Do you know what I'm going to say?
No, I was just saying, I think it's a crown.
Yeah, well, whatever. She was wearing it and Peter Sellers was, lit as usual. And he was like, excuse me, could you remove your hat?
Peter. I feel like that the same way about David Lewis. Like, I it'd be weird hanging out with him because, like, who the hell is he? Is he Bill the Butcher?
He seems much more earnest.
He seems just kind of like a weird, shy dude. Like,
he's a cobbler.
Yeah. Being There, it's such a good movie. I forgot about it. I got to rewatch that. Yeah, Hal Ashby.
How can you say that? I'm upset too, Dimitri.
My next movie I picked is from 1989, and it's The Yards.
It's Mark Wahlberg?
Mark Wahlberg and Joaquin Phoenix. I'm a big Joaquin Phoenix fan. I'm a big, big Joaquin Phoenix fan. There's not a movie that I've seen that I've been like, meh. I love everything he does.
I'm Not There?
Okay.
I'm Still Here.
That's a documentary, so that doesn't count.
Okay. Well,
a stage documentary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's classified as under documentary, so.
A mockumentary where you are the mocked. Yeah.
Quote unquote, but yeah, this is James Gray's first film. No, second film. He had done Little Odessa before that, and I just really liked. I got to see James Gray speak at. You did too. You were there too, right?
I was there. Yes,
and he spent like 2 hours just talking shit about people in Hollywood, literally. And he was just really
honest.
That's
what you want to
hear, right? Yeah, yeah, really.
No one wants a sincere answer to a question.
Yeah, yeah.
He could have been here tonight. Is that what you're saying?
I really wanted to hear how much of an asshole Spielberg was when you're telling that story.
Yeah. Nicest guy in the world.
And he was really honest about, like, you know, when people would ask him questions, he was really honest about everything, and I really enjoyed that about him. And he talked about, like, there's a fighting in this with Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg. And he said Joaquin Phoenix was like, just let us fight for reals, you know? It's near the end of the movie. We're almost done filming. If we get hurt, it's okay. And he's like, you know, Mark Wahlberg, he's a real fighter. Like, he can fight. You know that, right?
And he's in,
like,
those ads and everything.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, but I think I could take him. And in the scene, he's supposed to take him down, you know? And it's, what they did is they set up all these cameras. Like, it was like 8 cameras. And they're like, okay, we'll just go ahead. Just no face. Don't hit in the face. Just body shots. Mm-hmm. And you see the scene. You see the scene in the movie, and you see that Mark Wahlberg's carrying Joaquin Phoenix the whole time. Like, he's literally letting him. He's letting him hit him because Mark Wahlberg could take him out in a second. But it's the best fight scene I've seen because it's kind of like raw, and like Joaquin's just trying. At one point, you see, like, he's like, screw it, I'm going to hit him in the face. And he's, like, missing, like, just, like, you can't do a fight scene like that without it being real. Because you see, like, the desperation in his face and, like, where he's just swinging full speed and just missing. And, you know, like, it's just such a good fight scene and such a good movie. And James Caan is amazing in that, I think. James Caan is amazing in everything.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's one of those guys that don't like to rehearse, and I don't understand that. And he just says, yeah, I've never done this before, so we just go out there, you know, and we just have the conversation. I'm like, and one more time, that's why I'm not James Caan. Him and Meryl Streep, they're people that just show up and do it the first time. I'm like, man, that is amazing.
Have you worked with Scott Caan?
The only work I've done with Scott Caan is he wrote a play, and I was driving by the back of Studio 2 one night, and he says, hey, you want to do a cameo tonight that he and Val and Laura Katz were doing? Do you remember that play they did?
Was it about 9/11? No, that wasn't it, right?
No, there was a lot of cocaine involved.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
And so I said, you want to do a because we were in class together for several years. And he said, you want to do a cameo? And I said, okay. And and so he didn't, don't tell us what you're doing. So I just ran in their door, and I was just screaming, where's the keys? Where's the skis? Where's the keys? And they're like, and Val just starts handing me keys. You know, Val's so good, and he was just handing me keys. And they're all like running away from me, and I'm screaming and yelling. And they're like, what's going on? What are you doing? What's going on? I said, your car is blocking the place. My wife has irritable bowel syndrome. You know, and they're like, no, that's not our car. And I said, like, oh, my God, I forgot. I'm sorry. You know, I just, my wife, she gets so upset. She thinks she's always going to shit herself. And, you know.
And had you read what the play was about?
I'd seen the play.
Oh, you had seen the play.
Yeah, yeah. But he said, look, he said, come in and just do a bit and leave. Don't, you know, it's not
don't
your
linger.
Play. Well, yeah. It's not your play. Yeah, and I knew that. But I can understand where he's had problems with people who didn't know that. They're on stage and like, I'm going to knock it out for half an hour. You know what I mean? So I went in. We did the bit. Probably 3-4 minutes and it was over. You know what I mean? And then you're gone. But he did flag me down one day. He's like, you're irritable bowel syndrome. He said, I wrote that in a movie and you're going to be saying it. So that's, you know, I'm still waiting for the film. Yeah. Yeah. It's not Hawaii 5-0.
I know. And, but yeah, The Yards. Go see it. And if you watch the DVD, there's a really cool commentary with Steven Soderbergh and James Gray together. I don't know what Steven's doing on the commentary, but They have really good insight on film and stuff, so check that out. Have you guys seen it at all?
Nope. I have not.
It's a pretty good movie. I enjoyed it. Maybe it's
the fight scene sold me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
It made me see, what was it, The Quest.
Ooh.
The Van Damme movie, The Quest.
Yes.
I only saw that because in interviews he kept saying that, yeah, so we went over there and we're doing all these, because it was supposedly like an international fighting ring or whatever. And so I went over there and we had all these guys, you know, from, you know, Thailand and China and Japan and all these guys. And like, they kept getting mad if I didn't hit them. Like, if I didn't actually hit them in the scene, they kept getting angry at me. So I was like, all right. So you go and they're hitting each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they hitting him back?
I would assume so.
Wow.
But I guess I also shouldn't assume.
See,
maybe not on the reverse shot.
That just takes me back to Demolition Man, because I remember Wesley Snipes talking about how he was all big about being in a fight scene with Sly. He's like, well, it's Sylvester Stallone. I can probably hit him. And he kicks him, and Sly says, cut. He's like, don't kick me.
He's like, hey,
Wes.
How come Ricardo has the only cushion chair?
Well, I mean,
it's a question for Ricardo.
Yeah,
because I picked it out of my office. Yeah. Next movie, Demolition Man.
No, although I do really love Demolition Man.
It's on streaming.
Taco Bell won the fast food wars. Yeah. swearing is a crime. That swearing is a crime thing. I knew that would happen someday. And then there's that township in Massachusetts that now swearing in town is a crime.
Fuck that.
That was my line.
You know what would be really disappointing is that, okay, I fucking love Taco Bell. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Horribly bad fast food.
You're saying what if it had lost the fast food wars?
No, what I'm saying is if I woke up and they woke me up like, you know, 100 years in the future and they're like, dude, all we have is Taco Bell. I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. And then you showed up to Taco Bell and all they had was fucking salads. I'd be really upset.
Like Taco Bell won, but you're not allowed to eat greasy food anymore.
No. It's illegal to eat greasy food. I'd just kill myself.
No, I don't know. The Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid made me think of Steve Martin, and then I have been listening to nothing but comedies, so I might as well stick with that. And we got to talk about The Jerk.
Oh.
Yes.
Love it. I love it. And nothing was funnier than him saying to Precious at the Academy Awards, you and I both started out the same way. We're both born poor black children.
You did say that to her. Forget about that.
This is good. This is way better than the other pizza in a cup place. Yeah. I get one out of business.
How old were you when you saw this?
Oh, God. I was probably, I don't know, like 9 or 10 or something.
55.
I felt like I saw this as a kid and it was really funny, but then when I rewatched it again, I caught like the second level of jokes. That was,
well, yeah, everything's in a new context. Yeah,
yeah. So
he hates these cans.
I was in that clam bathtub.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I was in the, yeah. That was in a huge mansion on Sunset.
Really?
Yeah. It was called the Sheik's house. Everybody knew it because he put pubic hair on his statues. In the 70s, it was most expensive property in Beverly Hills for many, 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 many years, and it was a huge mansion. And when he beat up his wife and arrested him, which they don't do in his country, so he fled to his country, and he left the house there, but he didn't want her to get it, so he torched it.
Wow.
And so a friend of mine had the security contract on it, so we climbed up the burned-out stairs. You had to go up the stair rail, but I wanted to go in the tub.
And the tub was still standing?
Yeah, it was still there. That was the house. That was the house. It was an unbelievable house.
Should have taken that tub.
But that was that was a phenomenal movie. Jackie Mason he's funny.
Yeah, yeah. Good pick, man. What the hell, dude? With your comedies.
What about Shithead? Come on, are we done with that movie? I mean, all I need is this lamp. Come on, Shithead.
And this chair, and I don't need anything else except this.
I need this.
And the paddle ball.
My special purpose.
Is this your favorite Steve Martin movie?
Oh, that's a good question. House Sitter is really good.
I love
that.
That
was a joke. Sorry. No, House Sitter's terrible. But
like, all right, well, to each his own.
I know you too. No, don't be understanding about something like that.
Man with Two Brains?
No, The Jerk is way better than that.
Yeah.
The Jerk's The Jerk's probably
best. In Born Standing Up, he talks about like how he stopped doing stand-up because The Jerk was the culmination of all of his stand-up.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of his bits are in there. The cat juggling thing, where the guy comes in and shows
It's the best. I mean, it's the epitome of Steve Martin's stand-up, so.
Yeah.
The scene where he's playing banjo on the beach, mm-hmm. it's just that perfect
ukulele.
Yeah, the ukulele. It's just that perfect blend of like a nice little moment and also being hilarious. Because then she pulls out the
it's like a cornet.
Yeah, the cornet, and then finishes it off.
It's a great movie. I do love most of his movies. I mean,
He's always L.A. maybe L.A. Story. If it's a toss-up between anything, it would be L.A. Story.
Yeah.
Roxanne's which is just too. About perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roxanne's great, but yeah, LA Story's is
The Lonely Guy.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to say it. My favorite Steve Martin movie, Three Amigos.
Oh, Three Amigos. Yeah. But that's not his movie.
No, it isn't. Yeah. But the all three of them are amazing.
Yeah.
And the villain is pretty funny.
I feel like you had mentioned something how we all left off a Steve Martin movie that you said you would have put on a list that we had made previously. The one when we did Fathers, where you...
Father of the Bride?
No. The one with Gabriel Byrne and Steve Martin.
Steve Martin movie with Gabriel Byrne?
Yeah.
Was he really serious? Did he play the devil?
No, that was Kevin Spacey. You're talking about Usual Suspects?
Spanish Prisoner. He's great in Spanish Prisoner.
He was great in Spanish Prisoner. I love Bowfinger.
Oh, Bowfinger. Bowfinger. Come on.
Mindhead.
Do the thing. Eddie Murphy with the Eddie Murphy face on a stick, man. Putting on the suits. Okay, man. Do the thing. That's.
A Simple Twist of Fate.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I thought it was you.
Mm. That was Frank Oz, right, Bowfinger?
Yeah, it was. Damn, Frank Oz.
Mindhead.
To Mindhead.
The master has nothing on the 10 minutes of Mindhead stuff and Bowfinger.
Bowfinger's pretty funny. I don't know why it wasn't well received, right, when it came out?
I don't think it was.
Yeah, I think it was.
Maybe because it's so industry-centric.
Yeah.
But I love it. I loved it then.
Yeah. Adam?
Can I just do Bowfinger? I have no idea. This whole random list business is very strange.
You want one of mine?
Yeah, let's do one of yours, and we'll just.
Oh
we'll
no no no! I said you want to talk about one of mine. I'm going to talk about. I don't mean to have obscure movies. I'm not that much of a movie buff, but I recorded a movie. It's on my DVR. It's called Inside Moves, with John Savage. I think it's 1980. And it was after Deer Hunter. It was after Hair. It was after, what else did John Savage do? Anyway, and so it's a good movie. It's about a guy who's trying to commit suicide, and he tries it twice, and he jumps off a building, and he lives on top, and lands on top of a car, and he doesn't kill himself. You know, he just becomes crippled.
Yeah.
And so that's John Savage's character, and he ends up at this bar where everybody's crippled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blind guy missing hands, you know. And so he's trying to get his life back, you know, and he's trying to get back on track. And David Morse, it's his first movie. He plays a bartender, and he's a guy with a bum, I think it's a bum hip, and he can't play basketball. He's good enough to be a professional basketball player, but he's got a bad hip. He needs surgery, and he can't make any money. He's just a bartender at this bar with all this freak show. It's really kind of cool. And so he runs into Harold Sylvester, plays a professional ball player who pays for the surgery. And then the guy, David Morris, makes it to the NBA and then shines on everybody at the bar. You know what I mean? But he's like, yeah, you know, we all, you know, it's like one for all. We're all crippled. We're all handicapped, you know, physically handicapped. Yeah. And we're all in this together. And as soon as he gets the surgery, he leaves them all behind. But every character in that is, I think, great. I just loved the movie and I recorded it. And my son's 21 now. And, you know, all I can give him is, you know, is what I know, and most of it is acting or movies. He's not an actor. He doesn't want to be an actor. He doesn't care about acting. But And so we sit around, and the thing about him, ever since he was like 6 or 7 years old, you put on a classic, he'll sit through it.
Really?
You put on a bad movie, he'll get up and leave the room. It just doesn't matter. And he did that with kids' movies that were good when he was young. Or if it was a good kids' movie, he'd be, you know. I mean, we went to see Muppet Treasure Island. I was so excited. I wanted to see another Muppet movie, and it was awful. And like 20 minutes in, he's like, hey, what's out in the lobby? And he just got up. But, you know, I don't care whether he was 10, 11 years old or watching Chinatown, Patton. You know, he's just a young kid. And at one time my ex comes in, she walks into me, and she's like, he's seen Full Metal Jacket. I'm like, it's Stanley Kubrick. It's Full Metal Jacket. He's 11. I'm like, yeah, but it's Full Metal Jacket, man.
He's like, he's hitting his schoolmates with bars of soap.
I did fast forward to a few parts of Clockwork Orange, though.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing, though. That's like the dream, right? To have a kid just absorb a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, we're watching Chinatown. I swear he was 11 or 12, and they talk about the pond with the salt water, and he's like, oh, yeah, Dad, salt water. Didn't the guy have salt? I was like, took me like 6 times watching to catch that, you know? And so, yeah, it's very cool that I had him come by, and we're not talking about this one, but I had him come by like a couple weeks ago, and we just sat and watched Fandango, Kevin Costner's first movie.
No.
Oh,
well, you guys got to see that. You got to see Fandango.
Wow.
You got to see Kevin Costner when he was young and full of energy and alive.
That sounds like a sight.
No, he's great. I mean, it's the same energy as Silverado.
Yeah.
So, but Fandango, please see. It's really good. But anyway, again, but Inside Moves, I think if you guys see that,
Richard Donner.
You enjoy what's that?
Inside Moves.
Yeah, Richard Donner. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, good. You know, I don't know about, you know, I don't know if these were indies back then. I don't think they had them like that. But, you know, it's a good film. And again, David Morris went on to do, you know, everything.
I think they just had movies that they didn't put any marketing into.
Right.
Yeah.
They would make them, then just kind of put them out.
But my favorite year in The Tempest got lost in the E.T. swirl. Yeah. Those are both 82. My favorite year in The Tempest with John Cassavetes.
Age is a big year. Also, Wrath of Khan, The Thing, Poltergeist.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. But I know E.T. was the monster. And these movies were at small theaters, and they were just great. But Inside Moves was 2 years before that. I believe it was 1980. So
nice.
It just makes me feel good to hear about a child watching a black and white movie without any sort of prejudice. Because most people I talk to, just that equates to inferiority.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The lack.
My dad refuses to see a movie this black and white. He's like, well, I'm not going to pay to see a movie that's black and white.
Adam Scott's dad he got really upset when Adam taped over his colorized copy of King Kong.
Yeah. Oh, which King Kong? Not
the original.
Oh, okay. The black and white version.
Not the Dina De Laurentiis, because I worked on that as a child.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you do in that?
Well, I wasn't really a child. I wanted to say how old I am.
all right. Are we at number 3? Right?
2. Kind of?
Two.
Oh, you are at number 3.
Okay. My number 3 is from 2005, and it's The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada.
Yeah.
I love this movie. Yeah. I just rewatched it, and
I was waiting for the stillness to come up.
Yeah, right? This is a really still movie. I have this thing where
he shows us ants.
Yeah. Yeah, he does, literally shows us ants. I really love, like, still movies. Like, just, some would consider them boring.
Not so much with the motion and the motion pictures you enjoy.
Yeah.
Well, it depends how they're made.
Yeah.
I like this movie.
This movie's great. It's written by Guillermo Arriaga. He did like 21 Grams. He was a big collaborator with Alejandro González.
Wait, is there a car accident in this movie that I'm forgetting?
No, there isn't. There's no car accident in this one. But it's Tommy Lee Jones' second movie he directed. He's done three.
He's so good in it, too.
Tommy Lee Jones is one of the guys who when I was a kid, I hated him because of the Fugitive. Because
he was trying to kill Harrison Ford.
Yeah, I'm like,
you hated him because of the Fugitive?
Yes.
He's trying to kill Indiana Jones.
No, is The Fugitive. I was like, this guy's a dick. Richard Kimmel was telling the fucking truth.
Yeah. Back when you liked or disliked a movie based on how they treated the people you liked in the movie.
See, even as a kid watching The Fugitive, that was a weird movie for me because I was rooting for both of them. Like, yeah, find the guy . Like, both of them were trying to I wanted both of them to win. Yeah.
It's a happy ending, no matter what happens.
Yeah, yeah, someone's gonna find their guy.
And Harrison Ford went into the hospital and he had to go get some he had to get some sort of evidence or something. He went and talked to the lab technician, and that was Jane Lynch.
Oh yeah, it was Jane Lynch.
Yeah, the one that helps him.
Yeah,
His friend,
Julianne Moore's in the hospital. She's the one that catches him.
She's a nurse that catches him.
Yeah. She's a doctor.
Doctor, I'm sorry.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, she's a woman. Can't she be a doctor?
But yeah, this movie is really great. It's Barry Pepper's in this. Three Burials of Monte Cristo.
Yeah,
and
Levon Helm.
Yes,
he's great.
He's great.
That's right.
And
rest in peace.
January Jones playing the same character she plays in everything. She's very much the same in everything. Yeah.
I feel like she had a bit more emotion in this than she did in, say, X-Men: The Last Stand.
Yeah.
Are you calling her the Gary Cooper
first
of
class.
Her time?
That's what I meant. First class.
Gary Cooper's good. What are you talking about? Hey,
can I tell a Tommy Lee Jones story? Can we do
by
that?
By all means.
So, well, I
as
just
long
I,
as it
I
supports
just,
Tommy Lee Jones being a badass.
I just blew this story. Blew the story. I've never told it like that before, so I just blew the story. So. I just blew the reveal. My dad was working on a movie in 1976 called The Amazing Howard Hughes. It was a TV movie. And my dad came home. And my dad was born in 1912. He was old when I was born. And he was an old school actor. And he didn't like James Dean. And he knew James Dean from New York. And he didn't like, Brando so much. He thought they were all young punks. And so he comes back and he never talks like this. And he says, Brian, I met a young man today. He's going to be a big, big star. And that is an impression of my father. He says, he's going to be a big, big star. And I never heard him talk about young actors like that. I said, really, Dad? Who's that? He said, his name is Tommy Lee Jones. So he played Howard Hughes in this movie. And as James Franco told me, the only Texan ever to play Howard Hughes.
Because Howard Hughes was a Texan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. 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 True. I'm really... Two things that I want to talk about that came out of what he just said. One is I still want to see the Christopher Nolan Howard Hughes movie. He stopped making it when Scorsese got greenlit for his movie. But
really?
he had been working on it for 3 years on a script. That's like, well, if you notice, there's undertones of really Howard Hughes in kind of every movie. He's really obsessed with Howard Hughes.
Wow.
And like, well, if you see Dark Knight, I don't know if you've seen Dark Knight Rises.
I haven't seen the new one, no.
Okay, well, there's definitely a big undertones of Howard Hughes in that one.
Melvin and Howard?
Melvin.
I love Melvin and Howard.
And another thing is...
And I love The Aviator.
I love The Aviator, too, yeah.
The Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer, that's right. I
stood in Samuel French right behind Jennifer Connelly right after The Rocketeer when she still had that baby fat. It was a long line. I could have stood there forever. Wait a minute. This is going to be considered stalking in this day and age. So.
What do you think of James Dean?
Oh, I love James Dean.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I think what he clarifies who he is in the movie Giant. When everybody else is kind of doing what they're supposed to do, and he walks in the room, and it just lights up.
Yeah,
it does. I've seen the things he did on TV. I've seen a lot of the stuff that they put out on him. I've seen the documentaries. I just think I don't know how great of a technical actor he was going to become. And my ex-wife turned me on to him, before this resurgence. And, many years ago, and, as she said, the 60s would have killed him if the car wreck didn't. But I just thought he knew how to be himself. He knew how to be free.
Mm.
And he had a lot of emotion. I think he knew what he wanted. And, he did a lot of other things. He did artwork, photography. He did a lot of stuff. I mean, he was very young when he died, and he was really into so many different things. I think
he never felt like an actor.
Yeah,
he just kind of felt like, and that's totally to his credit. This is a compliment. Yeah. He just felt like James Dean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I read something where he really wanted to go into directing, and I think he would have been an amazing director. My favorite thing he's done is Giant. That's my favorite piece of his. But besides that, I don't know. I wasn't really blown away. But I think I do agree with what you said about he definitely light up a room when he would come in.
Right, but I'm talking about being 1954 and 55, where all these other people were doing these other things that they didn't want him to do, and then he was just coming out alive, full of emotion, and, you know, kind of understanding what he was doing. And when, you know, when he knocks, look, Rebel, I like it. And when he gets up and he knocks, you know, Jim Backus over the chair. I mean, he's just like a kid who's really, you know, I don't know if I want to say fighting to get out of his own skin, but fighting to get out of the mold, to break out. I mean, he does embody that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. All of his films, I feel like the giant kind of it still makes sense to me. Where, like, I feel like Rebel Without a Cause, like, it's like, it just doesn't really speak to me, you know?
I think Giant is a big, beautiful movie. George Stevens, you know, that was a great production.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
And then, speaking of Salminio, you were in James Franco's...
I was in James Franco's Sal, you got cut out? Though I am not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, another movie you got cut out of.
What did you say?
Another movie you got cut out of.
Well, except at least in Funny People, they left my head. So yeah. I still get paid.
And I hear you, though. I hear you laughing and Funny People.
And Funny People, you hear me laughing. Yeah. Adam Sandler is such a funny stand-up. He was killing me. He's really funny. But, you know, when they made Sal, and I read a review on it, I said, well, James Franco makes a non-political look at his life. And I said, oh. And I knew I was out of it because I was the politics. I found the homosexual material. We were kind of hiding it from the press. And anyway, so, yeah, the politics of the film were cut out.
Yeah.
And it was, and you know, and so it was a good piece on Sal's life, his last day.
Yeah, yeah.
I have to ask, have you ever been to one of James Franco's pop-up bars?
The writer's room on Hollywood Boulevard.
Okay. Wait, isn't it? Doesn't he do it at different spots in the city?
I've been to that one a couple times. I haven't been to any other pop up bars. I've been to parties. a lot of things go on at those bars.
Wow. So. Interesting. All right. Well, it's down to your number three, right? Or two?
We're two. Two. So, all right. Two and one. I'll just talk about the movies that tie for my favorite things. Probably second and, second, Network. 1976? Someone with
It's funny,
iPad.
We all have technology here, but we're like, six?
But it's...
76.
Yeah.
It has never not been relevant.
Yeah.
Everything, like, and I mean literally. Like, usually things are, you know, thematically, that really fits with, you know, things that are happening in this time, but... Literally, things happening in that movie relate directly to today with, you know, as far as its media criticisms, whether it be, you know, the oil or, you know, the television, just that.
Sorry, it's me again. I was like, what is that noise? And it's my trailer's going off again. Sorry, guys.
Just doing like the, you know, the Black Panther show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there, and Beale's monologue just still... resonates. Like I still get shivers when he says, God damn it, I'm a human being, God damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is unreal just to see him come unhinged. And Faye Dunaway is amazing. William Holden is just the king of cool through the whole thing. Him and Faye Dunaway is so amazing in that movie.
Yeah. And Faye Dunaway was in the middle of her run of amazing movies from the late 60s through the 70s, amazing parts that, you know, maybe unparalleled by anybody, but maybe Meryl Streep or something. Yeah. I don't know who had, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, Network, Chinatown, Mommy Dearest. You know, she's just these parts that were just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone in it is great.
Yeah.
And then what's, you know, I'm blanking, but who plays William Holden's wife? Won the Oscar for the one scene she's in the entire movie.
Estelle Getty?
No, yeah. Stallone's mother.
Yeah, yeah. That's such a good movie, and it's on Criterion, and I want to get it on Blu-ray,
On Blu-ray, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is... because I hadn't seen it. I think it's so revelatory for me because I hadn't seen it until somewhat recently, like a few years ago.
Really?
I had just never seen it. And it became my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
Like from the very beginning when he has that line, we'll wipe that fucking Disney right off the air. and then so the credits start. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
It's funny.
It's got so many balls, that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I saw this when I was really young, and I just wasn't getting it until I rewatched it when I was older, and I'm like, oh, I understand.
Yeah,
now.
The fact that I saw it when I was already jaded, I think that helped a lot to speak to you.
Yeah. Good pick, man. There's nothing anybody could say bad about that movie.
Ever. Script, directing, acting.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
I didn't like the clothes.
the extras were horrible.
Just kidding.
A little concerned. Yeah.
One of the extras kept picking their nose and it threw me.
Yeah. Adam, what is your number two?
All right. Well, let's see.
Let's do your favorite movie.
My favorite movie?
Right now, you got 3 seconds to answer.
I've talked about my favorite movie already.
One.
We did favorite movies a long time ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was our first episode. It was your favorite movie.
What was your favorite movie?
Oh, man, that was
curious.
It was either...
Eddie Hall or The
Apartment. It was either It's a Wonderful Life or Jaws.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, which are two very different movies.
That's a flip
of the
coin.
I've seen them on a double bill before.
Both great Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Good holiday movies. I don't know. See, you were talking about Faye Dunaway and all of her string of good movies, and just made me think of a bad movie that she did,
which is
Supergirl.
Oh, Supergirl. Wow! You know what? I haven't rewatched it as an adult. I only remember it as a kid, as a really young kid that was getting into girls, and I love this movie. Yeah, I remember thinking, man, Supergirl's hot.
And that's Helen Slater.
I don't know the rest of the movie. I just remember I just kept staring at her and go.
Your hormones are so rampant.
Yeah.
You can't even look any further than the title of the movie to know whether or not there's a girl in it.
Well, the skirt. I'm like, will the skirt get shorter at any point of this movie? And it didn't. I kept looking just at that level. But Supergirl.
Supergirl. It's just gut reaction, all the Faye Dunaway talk. but I enjoyed it a lot when I was a kid. I have not watched it recently, but I do remember it pretty vividly. And thinking back on it now, it's pretty bad. Like, I just remember when they go to the Phantom Zone and she's there with Peter O'Toole. Anyone? No one else remembers O'Toole's in this movie?
I don't remember Peter O'Toole. I saw it as a kid and I don't remember anything about it but the fact that I thought she was
hot. Zoltar? Trying to help her escape from the Phantom Zone?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a movie called Supergirl. So
yeah. 1984.
Interesting.
Okay, hold on. Mia Farrow is in it. I don't remember that at all. Don't remember that. I remember Helen Slater. I remember Peter O'Toole, and I remember Faye Dunaway, but I don't remember.
Who plays Supergirl?
Helen Slater is Supergirl.
Oh, okay.
And then Mark McClure, who plays Jimmy Olsen in all the Christopher Reeve Superman, he's in it as Jimmy Olsen, like showing her around Metropolis, and it's just such a weird, weird movie with like black magic and. Faye Dunaway summoning people and sending them away to the Phantom Zone. It's very, very strange.
Interesting. I got to rewatch this movie.
Yeah, I think I need to rewatch it too.
I did not think that would be what you guys would say after the end of that conversation.
I didn't know all these people were in it. I don't know if Peter O'Toole was in it.
I don't remember Mia Farrow at all. I have to go back just to see what she does in this movie.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to your number two,
Brian? Yes, I... At my age, you know, a number two comes usually sooner than expected. I'm going to go with the boxer.
Ooh.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah.
Emily Watson.
First of all, what's your favorite Daniel Day-Lewis movie?
The Boxer.
The Boxer.
Yeah. I know that may not, I've heard people talk. You know, I'm not that great with movies sometimes about, well, you know, this story and this story got lost. I don't know. I like The Boxer. I like the story of, the fight, the struggle in Ireland, the North and the South. I know a lot about it, and I just love him. When it came out, I went to see it in the theater. Then when it came out on DVD, I watched it every day for 30 days,
wow.
And then I went to a screening of The Company that Robert Altman made.
Yeah,
and. Emily Watson was there, and I walked up to her, and I know she called the police after this, and it was not my intent. I didn't want to be a jerk. You know, people walk up to celebrities and they jack them off. You know, they just act like an idiot. I walked up with this stone look on my face and I said, I just want you to know when The Boxer came out on DVD, I watched it every day for 30 days. And I must have looked like I had the look of Manson in my eyes. And I turned and walked away. For the rest of the night, she's sitting at a bar. There was a reception and she was like, this was a screening. She was like, you know, kind of looking at me with her boyfriend. She was like, yeah, that's a guy over there. I was like, that was not my intent. I was just really so moved by the movie. I liked the story. I watched it the other day. I just really like it. And there's a guy who plays Ike Weir in it. His name's Ken Stoudt. He's a Scottish actor. And I just thought he was so great. And there's Gerard McSorley, who plays the main, you know, antagonist. And he's just always so brilliant. And he was in... he was the drug dealer in Veronica Guerin, the main drug dealer.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about two movies, when he punches Cate Blanchett in the face outside of his mansion, and that look on her face is like she just got punched in the face. I mean, I'm so big into small moments with actors, whether it be character actors. That's the thing I got from my father. My father used to be just so impressed, especially by the British character actors who had two or three lines in a movie, and they were so memorable, you know. And she's not a small actor, but he punches her in the face, and the look on her face, she is stunned, confused, scared. And it just looks like a guy just punched her in the face. But anyway, that's Gerard McSorley from the Boxer. But Brian Cox is in it. You know, it's just I just really enjoyed the movie made by Jim Sheridan.
Yeah.
And you know, I just think it was I guess he trained for 2 years boxing.
Sounds about right.
You know, yeah.
He probably competed.
Yeah.
He probably won a belt or two.
Yeah. Wow. And so that was all good, and I love the way the movie started. There's no he doesn't talk in the movie for, I don't know the exact time, 15 minutes into the movie. Yeah. He's just, you know, and he talks about the silence taking over and forgetting what everybody sounds like. And, you know, it's just, I just enjoyed it. It just always moved me.
Yeah. I love Daniel Lewis. There's nothing, I know some people... Some mutual friends that criticize him, and
they're idiots.
I agree.
Yeah,
I don't understand. That's a pretty objective thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what he's done that's bad.
Yeah,
I mean, I
don't either.
Bad Nine. Performance by him. Yeah. I haven't seen that.
No, never. He's always good.
Yeah,
he's good, but Nine's not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Did he do a bad performance?
Yeah.
So,
Good pick, man. I got to rewatch The Boxer again now. For my number two, I picked. A movie from 1996, a movie that I was really obsessed with for a while. And that movie is Swingers.
Swingers.
Oh, love Swingers.
Yeah.
God.
I felt like that just kind of like it came out right time, right place. Like it's interesting. I just was watching something, either a podcast or something where Jon Favreau was on and they talked about how that was the first thing he had written. And he basically said, oh, I kind of co-directed it, but I just didn't get the credit for it. And I could see that. I could see that.
Well, they toured to get financing. They toured as a stage act.
Yeah, yeah.
To try and get money, like reading scenes.
Yeah.
You know, the actors in the movie reading scenes on stage.
No, that's cool. I didn't know
that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
To try and get money for it. So the movie's great, but then it gave us the big band revival in the late 90s.
Yeah.
So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. But everybody was so good, and so many people like that. I remember, like, oh, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, I forgot what his name was in it, or this person, Ron Livingston, or like Heather Graham,
yeah.
It's such, and then growing up in L.A., like, it was just things that you're like, oh, I know that guy. I know the guy that's always at a party, and it's always a crappy party.
Yeah.
Like, every, you know, that friend who's like, ah, this party sucks. Let's get out of here.
Nothing happened here anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I live in that neighborhood now where all of those bars were that they were going to. It's just weird. It's like, oh, hey, let's go down to the Dresden and see if Marty and Elaine are there.
Yeah.
They're still there, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 But the Derby's gone, right?
Jeremy's gone.
Yes,
Jeremy's gone.
It's a Chase bank. Yeah, it's a Chase.
Yeah, and it was a venue. And then,
Wait, it's a what?
A Chase.
It's a bank?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, for it was fuck's
kind of a,
sake.
It was kind of a cool venue for a while, just the Derby. It didn't have, like, the Dome or anything. Yeah. It was just the Derby. But, yeah, now it's a bank.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. I have to become a billionaire.
Yeah.
So I can buy back these properties.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny because, again, like, when I saw it, I still wasn't old enough to drink. But it kind of hit me where, like, I had gone through a breakup, and I'm like, I know what this guy's talking about. I left the 5 voicemails where I sound like a stalker.
Oh, God, that scene is one of the best awkward, painful scenes in a movie.
Yes.
When he's leaving those voicemails. That's a hard to watch. It's a Costanza thing where it's just really hard to watch him keep going at it.
And you're just like, just stop. Please stop. Yeah. Stop. It's one more. Hey, cut me off. And Vince Vaughn was amazing, and I still haven't seen Vince Vaughn at that level where he was just I don't know, he was just amazing in that.
Come on, the old school, what was it called?
Wedding Crashers.
No. When they were
old school.
Yeah. When he had that's his part. When he has a microphone, he can just talk to people. And
that's true.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's an unbelievable storyteller. Yeah. You know, jokester. I mean. I was doing ADR for the Ape, and we were in this studio on San Vicente, and they were talking. Vince Vaughn was in there for some movie. I forget what he was doing. You're not allowed to smoke in there. He was just smoking like a fiend. He was just chain smoking, and he said he would just start riffing off people. And there was a woman sitting there, and he was like riffing. He looks at her, and he's like, "Yeah, looking at you, I know you're never going to ask to the prom." And then he started doing something. The girl started crying because it was true. You know?
Horrible.
And the scene.
No, but like you said, Vince Vaughn is such a good. I just watched The Watch, and I'm still amused by him. But I think like that's his best performance in Swingers. He's just like, because you know a guy like that.
Yeah. He's unbelievable. Just,
yeah.
That movie dominated our lives when we were 14 to 16.
Yeah.
Everyone was saying money.
Yeah. I'm going to bring that back.
I don't remember anybody saying money.
I remember that. I remember people saying that all the time.
Yeah.
Money, I still say that. Like, when people aren't confident, I'm like, dude, you're so money, you don't even know it, dude.
You're like a big bear, man.
Now like a big bear with these big claws and these
big
teeth.
Fangs, man.
And you got a bunny in front of you.
Then the white dude gang members, you know, was like, hey, what's up, House of Pain? That was, I think, the main dude. Wasn't that Taylor Hackford's kid?
I think it was. Yeah.
You're not going to kill a bunny. You're just going to bat it around a little bit.
I remember thinking that girl he talks to, she's like, yeah, you asked me for an application for that Starbucks just a week ago. He's like, no, I have a booking agent now. So he's like, who's your booking agent? But that girl, I always thought, like, she's amazingly good looking, and she only did a couple films, and then she kind of, like, went away. She was
I can't picture
She was in that, and she was the cheerleader in The Replacements that Keanu Reeves falls for.
Okay.
But anyway. And she married Richard Branson.
Probably.
No.
You know, it's a weird thing. It made me think of it when someone brought up The Fugitive. But there's these little, like, you know, I guess actors call it business, right? And how you're doing something in a scene, you know, whether it be smoking your cigarette or drinking your coffee, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, in The Fugitive, when he goes back at the beginning of the movie, when he goes into the hotel room and makes the weird egg sandwich off of the person's plate when he leaves, I would, like, eat a bunch of egg sandwiches. Like, with egg scrambled that way, when John Favreau or Vince Vaughn comes in and gives John Favreau the salami and Swingers, and he's just eating the salami with a knife. I ate all my salamis with a knife like that.
Oh.
That inspired you to eat salamis with That's so awesome.
It was cool looking.
Yeah, it was cool looking.
I was like, I'm just going to take a knife. I'm just going to eat that salami. I don't need a plate.
Yeah. It's funny how that, like, it kind of appetizes you to do certain things. I agree. Like, sometimes when I watch people eat something, I'm like, oh, man, I got to eat there, or I got to order that. Like, whatever the fuck that is, I want to eat that.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so prime example, Goodfellas, every time they get to the scene where they're in jail cooking, I want to make pasta.
Yeah.
Cruising had that effect on me.
You're like, I just want to go out and pick up guys. Random guys. But, yeah, anyway, Swingers, my number two. Brandon.
All right. This is probably my favorite movie of all time, based on a play whose the playwright's name escapes me, and I can't remember the year. Maybe someone with a computer will look it up. But it's Harvey.
Oh,
Jimmy Stewart, Harvey. Yeah. I saw this movie when I was a kid, and it's
horror.
Yeah, Sam Shepard play.
Yeah, exactly. Neil LaBute, I think. But I would like to see actually the Neil LaBute version of Harvey. It would be the
Mary Chase.
Most decimating. Oh, Mary Chase. Okay. But this, I remember my dad showed it to me when I was a kid because he knew I'd like it. And it just, it has everything that I love in movies. It's got comedy. It's really dark if you look at it in a certain way, because Elwood P. Dowd is a crazy alcoholic for the most part.
Yeah.
The movie, you know, kind of insinuates that the rabbit's real, but you could look at it as that he's not real, and it's just, it's super dark, but, and it's heartwarming. His performance, like, no one, you know, they talked about remaking it years ago with Tom Hanks. And I guess that's maybe as close as you can get to someone as gentle and sincere as a Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are scenes like when he's in the back of the bar talking about, you know, meeting Harvey and, you know, them sitting at the bar. And, like, the line, no one ever brings anything small into a bar. Like, it's just, it's so good. It's a screwball comedy in parts. And I it's fantasy, it's drama, it's everything. I just love it.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it's a really great movie. They were recently going to remake that with Ben Stiller directing and Robert Downey Jr. as the lead.
I thought they were making it with the guy, Jim Parsons.
He's doing it on Broadway.
On Broadway.
Oh, that's right.
And that makes me angry, but that's fine.
Really? Are you all right? You need a number two?
But it's like his speech to the psychiatrist at the end about, you know, my mother used to say, you know, in this world you could be oh so smart or oh so pleasant. You know, for years I was smart. I recommend pleasant. Like, that is, this is no joke, that has informed my life from that point on. And it's just, I can't underestimate the impact that that movie had on me. And I've never seen it produced as a play, though I would like to, but I would not like to, I don't know, Jim Parsons seems like, I feel like he's chosen because he plays like, you know, a guy somewhere on the Asperger scale,
yeah,
you know, on the show. So they need someone who's like kind of weird. It seems like a misread of the part,
yeah,
right. You know, where it's just a guy who probably was, you know, who drank a whole lot in his life,
yeah,
and then just, you know, met this thing or something happened and he became a totally different person, and it's great.
Yeah, I just recently wanted to watch this again because I've been I DVR'd what's it called? The Elijah Wood Show on FX?
Wilfred.
Yes. I'm really digging that. And yeah, it kind of reminded me of this a little bit, and I've been wanting to rewatch Harvey, which I should. Yeah, Wilfred's good. Have you guys seen it?
I haven't seen Wilfred.
I think I've seen the first couple episodes.
It's interesting. I really liked the season finale for season one, so I'm catching up, guys. But yeah, good fucking movie, dude.
And if I was rich, I want that painting that's in that's in their den
of him and Harvey.
Harvey. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, man.
Wherever that is.
Yeah. Adam?
All right. Well, I think I'm going to stay on this theme of drinking and go with a movie from 1945, which I'm never quite sure. I always want to use it on a list, but I'm never quite sure what list to use it on. I'm just going to use it now. It's The Lost Weekend.
Yeah.
This is one of those late night TCMs, like, oh, hey, what's this? And just stayed up way too late watching this movie when I think I had school the next day, and just loved it. It's dark. It's about this guy who's an alcoholic writer who's trying to give up drinking while his brother's out of town. And then he just kind of tries to go on this bender, and then he's trying to sell his typewriter so he can get booze. And just the scene that always sticks out in my mind is when he's walking down the street, going to all the pawn shops, trying to sell his typewriter so he can get his booze.
Yeah.
But it's a Jewish holiday, and so they're all closed. which, I mean, I guess is mildly racist in some way. I mean, it's for the time, but whatever. It's just the heartbreak on Ray Milland's face as he's trying to find, like, he gets so excited when he sees this, finally finds a pawnbroker who's open. And he's like, oh, yes, I can sell my typewriter and I can get my fix. And it's just a very, very dark movie. I feel like most of it just rests on Ray Milland's performance, and he's great. It's Billy Wilder, so you know what you're getting there.
Did Billy Wilder do the Jack Lemmon movie, The Wine and Roses?
Days of Wine and Roses.
Days of Wine and Roses.
Was that Billy Wilder?
I don't
think it was, right?
I don't think so.
That's
I want to say you're going to call me crazy, but I want to say that that was, what's his name?
It was.
The guy, yeah.
You're right.
Who's his face?
Cecil B. DeMille.
The guy who did all the Peter Sellers movies.
Oh, Julie.
Blake Edwards. Edwards.
Blake Edwards.
Was it? Yeah, may have been.
I'm looking it up right now as we speak, and yes, it is Blake Edwards.
Thank you.
Yes.
Wow.
That was a very moving movie, too.
Yes.
Yeah. That was, actually, that was those two movies. For some reason, Days of Wine and Roses, Harvey, and The Lost Weekend all just kind of go together as these movies about drinking, just different looks at these people whose lives have revolved around drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Harvey's definitely the lighter fare of these three. But they're all great movies, and I love Lost Weekend. And you know what? Let's go ahead and say that The Days of Wine and Roses is my number three, since I never did one.
Yeah.
So that's my number, or two and three, one and two.
Jack, have you guys seen the episode of Inside the Actors Studio where Jack Lemmon was on? Where he kind of,
he has his breakdown.
Yeah, he has his breakdown. And it's like, it's hard to, I have a hard time rewatching that, because the first time I watched it, I started just bawling. Like, I'm like, what?
Talking about Days of Wine and Roses?
Yeah. And he's like, what's the hardest thing? I think they asked him, what's the hardest thing about that movie or something? And he's like, I'm an alcoholic.
Jesus.
And he's like, and James Lipton's like, what do you mean? He's like, no. He's like, I'm really an alcoholic. And he just starts like crying, and then you're like, no, not here. You know, it's like, it's hard to get through. Yeah. But it's really good. It's really good.
Jack Lemmon used to make me Shirley Temples at the time of The Apartment.
Really?
Not that I was born yet.
Yes. All right, but
that's a
good
fact.
Good way to bring us down, dude.
Well, if we do recaps, let's look at the recap here. God Bless America, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, Supergirl, Days of Wine and Roses, and The Lost Weekend,
which was a tie, functionally.
Yeah.
What was your recap? What were your movies?
Oh, recap. What was it? Oscar, The Producers. What else to say? Oh, The Jerk, Network, and Harvey.
Awesome.
See, that your list is one of these things. It's not like the other one list.
Yeah. Give us your recap of the movies we talked about.
Are we done?
No. We're gonna list your number one. So give us your recap. Then your number one.
What? I don't know what I talked. My favorite
year.
About
a ton of them.
My favorite year. We talked about Inside Moves. Why am I spacing on the Inside Moves? My favorite year.
The Boxer.
I think that was the only three.
And your number one?
And my number one out of five?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's my number one, but I'm going to talk about a movie that I love, and it never made it to DVD. And I'm a freak for this movie, and it's called American Hot Wax. And it was about music from the 1950s. It's about Alan Freed and the first rock and roll shows coining the phrase rock and roll. And it took place, the movie went on through the time of when Buddy Holly died,
mm-hmm.
which was in 1959. And Lorraine Newman played Carol King.
Wow.
And she would come down from her apartment in Brooklyn, you know, the Jewish girl from Brooklyn, and then there'd be four brothers on the corner, and she'd give them the songs to sing, and, you know, it was just all cool, and they'd take them to Alan Freed. And, you know, Alan Freed, I believe, was in Cleveland, but I think this was in New York. You know what I mean? So it was a kind of a mesh or whatever. Maybe I haven't seen it a long time. It's not on DVD, but I loved that movie. And it was just a great story. And Tim McIntyre played Alan Freed. And Tim McIntyre, he died of 41 of congestive heart failure at 41. Wow. And he was in Brubaker. You know, he did a lot of movies. I love Brubaker. I was going to talk about that. And one of Morgan Freeman's early movies. But so American Hot Wax was just a great movie for me, a story about the time. I saw Lorraine Newman once on an audition, and I went up to her and I said, when The Boxer came out, I watched it every day.
And then she talked to her husband. She's like, that's the guy.
Pointed you to Emily Watson.
Yeah.
And so I saw her on an audition one time. I went up to her and I said, I got to tell you, I'm a freak for her. You know, her eyes were rolling back. She knew I was going to say Saturday Night Live, and I said American Hot Wax, and she's like, what? I said, I just love American Hot Wax. She said, I've talked to producers. I don't know why. It's never made it to DVD. And when I have recorded it late night on cable sometimes, it's chopped up.
Really?
It's not the whole movie. Yeah. So I've never been able to get a hold
of it. Is it on tape, VHS?
I know.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't think it ever went to VHS.
It wasn't Warner Brothers, was it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I mean, you can look
it up. They have the Warner Archive.
Yeah, because Warner has the nice Warner Archive.
Yeah. Have you heard of this thing?
Yeah, I actually have. When I was in business, they were talking about putting it together. I used to deliver a lot of food to them while they were putting this thing together.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Neat.
That was probably 9 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 10 years ago they were talking about the Warner Archive.
Things are slow in this town.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how long it's been up, and I don't know how long it took to put together. You know, from concept to finished product.
Yeah.
Have you found it yet, American Hot Wax?
It says sign up to be notified when this item becomes available. No.
They're all. It doesn't exist.
I think you can get VHS.
Can you?
Is it one of the rare VHS that's like $100 to $200?
No, it was for a movie poster.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Sorry to get your hopes up.
Yeah,
maybe it's an 8mm.
Yeah, someone that happened the other day. Someone told me about this movie, The Turtle Diaries, with Ben Kingsley. And someone else, where he plays a zookeeper and he saves like a whole bunch of turtles, and it's you can only get it on VHS, and it's anywhere between $90 and like $250 for a copy on VHS.
What if they said this? What if they said there's a movie called
Turtle Diaries?
Turtle Diaries. If they said you should watch Turtle Diaries, it's what Zookeeper is based off of, and it's bankingly, it's amazing, and they really butchered it when they remade it. You know, so watch the original. But yeah, all right.
If you want to watch Mall Cop, you should watch Bad Lieutenant first. Yeah. That'll give you the idea.
All right. My recap was number 5, Igby Goes Down. 4, The Yards. 3 Burials of Melquiades Estrada. 2, Swingers. And I remember the movie I really wanted to talk about was a movie from 1953, Houdini, with Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh.
Yeah, sure.
I love this movie. Well, first of all, I am obsessed with Houdini. Yeah. I love Houdini. I love anything, just basically anything magic, except fucking stupid-ass Lance Burton. I fucking hate that guy. That's neither here nor there.
Oh, not that Houdini?
No.
Oh, my God.
The actual Houdini, Harry Houdini. And everybody keeps having their dream Houdini project, and then all of this falls apart. Ang Lee was going to do it at one point. Michael Mann. So it's always – it never come to fruition. So, but this is the best Houdini movie I've seen. Yeah. And Tony Curtis is amazing in it.
Yeah, and it always freaks me out because I have one of these like Edgar Allan Poe, Don't Want to Be Buried Alive things. You know, he's under the water and he's coming up under the ice.
Yes.
And that just freaks the hell out of me.
I haven't seen it, unfortunately. What does it go through his whole life, or does it focus on?
Yeah, it kind of starts off. It kind of starts off when he meets his wife.
Okay,
and until the end, and it's really well done, and it's Tony Curtis is amazing in it. Tony Curtis for me was kind of like when I was younger, it was like hit or miss when I was younger, but as I've grown older, I've learned to love Tony Curtis in everything he's done.
There's a reason he's Tony Curtis.
Yeah.
Have you been up to Houdini's mansion in Lower Canyon?
No.
Houdini's castle?
No. Have you?
Yeah.
Is it amazing?
We used to ride our bikes there as kids. Well, it's all changed now. You know, I'm talking about, 35 years ago, when it was still, before anything had started to be remodeled in Los Angeles and torn down. It was just the wreckage of what was formerly. Yeah, there was just the stonework and stuff. I got it on video.
Really?
Yeah.
I got to see that.
Hmm.
And I think, I don't know if Houdini's widow is still around. I don't think she is, but I know up to when I was a little kid, they would air the specials every year. And basically, because I'm obsessed with Houdini, he was obsessed with death. Like that was like his big thing. Houdini was obsessed with death, and he made a pact with his wife, and he said, whoever dies first, we're going to try to contact each other.
Yeah.
And they gave each other a password that only them two knew.
Yeah, was a huge skeptic.
Yeah. And she every year she would do, on his birthday, she would do this big old seance and try to contact him. And
So have you done the Houdini seance at the Magic Castle?
No.
It's like a dinner thing that you can get.
Really?
You get dinner and they do a Houdini seance.
I want a fucking dinner. Just want a seance.
It's the Magic Castle, dude.
I love the Magic Castle.
Dinner and a show.
Yeah. I love that close-up magic. I never want anybody to tell me how it's done. I just love it.
Yeah. And when I was a kid, and even a little bit as a teenager, I was into magic. And I used to hate when people go, do it again. Do it, like, do the trick again. Like, right. You show them a trick. And it's like, no. Like, now you want to just figure it out. Just enjoy what you just saw.
Right.
Like, were you entertained? Yes. And that's enough for you. Yeah. I'm not going to fucking do it again.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's what killed Houdini.
Yeah.
Some guy said, do it again.
Do it again. The number two. Do it again. Is that it? Did we get to the end? Did we all do number one?
That's it.
Yeah.
We all pee on each other, number one.
Yeah. I must have missed that part.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't lie, Adam.
Does anybody have a stream of the week? We forgot to mention it at the top of the show.
Anything? God Bless America is streaming.
There you go.
Something else you said was streaming.
Oh, Small Soldiers was just put on Netflix. I meant to bring that up with Tommy Lee Jones because I just rewatched Small Soldiers.
That's a good movie. Is it Kirsten Dunst?
It's great. Yeah, Kirsten Dunst, but Joe Dante.
Oh,
it's great.
Yeah.
Phil Hartman.
Yeah, Phil Hartman.
Did Joe Dante do Inner Space?
Yep.
Yes. I love that movie.
Yeah, Small Soldiers is closest you'll get to a Gremlins 3.
Yeah. Yeah. So Gremlins 1, period.
Gremlins 2 is awesome.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, no, it's great.
Okay. All right. What else? You could follow us on Twitter. Anything else you want to talk about, Brian?
Jackie Gleason and Nothing in Common.
Interesting. I haven't seen that.
With him and Tom Hanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Father and son.
Have you seen it?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I've read more about it than I remember watching the movie.
How old was Jackie Gleason when he passed?
I think it was about 75.
Oh, really?
I think.
God, I always forget that.
It was 1987.
Wow. So, he was a funny bastard.
Yeah, he was. He was incredible. But he was also a good dramatic actor.
Yeah.
I mean, he was great in... Great, now I forgot the Rod Serling boxer movie.
Oh, yeah.
That's not Kirk Douglas.
No.
He's great in The Hustler.
Yes.
No. Well, yeah, he was great in The Hustler. Come on, what's the other one?
I'm Brian Blank.
But Mountain is the character.
Yes.
Name. Oh, my God. Is this going to be recorded?
This is being recorded as we speak. There's a lot of pauses in this episode.
No.
Snapping fingers.
We got to figure it out before we get off. We got to say it. I can see it right now. Jackie Gleason was the manager, and what's his name? Anthony.
Snaps Provolone.
Yes, he was the boxer, the Greek Anthony Quinn.
Oh,
Zorba.
Yeah, he was the boxer. And, of course, people are out there.
Requiem for a Heavyweight?
For a Heavyweight. People are out there screaming when they're listening to this going, Requiem for a Heavyweight, you idiots, why are you on the air?
Yes.
But Jackie Gleason was a great dramatic actor. Did not like to rehearse either.
Really?
But he was a really great pool player. You know, I think he did all his own shots in The Hustler. So.
That's crazy. Jackie Gleason, amazing actor. What else? Anything else that we forgot to mention? No?
I write the songs that make the whole world sing.
Ooh. Interesting. we'll save that for part two. Well, thanks for Brian for coming over.
Thanks for having me. This was really fun.
It was really fun.
I love movies.
We love movies too.
Yeah, yeah.
We love movies so much that
I don't. That's why I come here to talk about it. It's like therapy. I'm like, all
right,
I got to talk about how much I hate movies again.
Yeah.
I'm taking it slow. I just kissed it. I just kissed movies. So.
You can find us on Twitter at the Film Podcast, right?
On Twitter? Yeah.
I don't know. Find us at Requiem for a Heavyweight.
At the Film Podcast.
At the Film Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, friend us, whatever. Just support the show. Give us a little rating on iTunes if you have the time.
Unless it's bad.
Unless it's bad.
No, make time.
Yeah, make some time. If you are going to buy something off Amazon, why not support our show by clicking our link on our website at thelistfilmpodcast.com. There's an Amazon link on the left side. Click on that, and it's not going to cost you any more to buy whatever crap you're buying on Amazon. It's just Amazon's going to give us a little couple shekels from their profits. And
which after conversion is not that much.
No, it's not that much, but it racks up. So do that and follow us again on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Ricardo, U-L-T-R-E-R-E-S. Brian, are you on Twitter?
What is this Twitter you speak of?
You're not, then.
I'm at an Adam Scott, A-N underscore Adam Scott.
At B-L Bennett, two N's, two T's.
I'm gonna start up a fake Brian Lally Twitter.
You know, I'm sure there's several Brian Lallys out there that are musicians and things. That are really
from Portland.
Yeah.
Yes. They're you thought you went to that too.
Yeah. So yeah, they're really enterprising. So whatever I'm supposed to have, I'm sure they have it already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. they have BrianLally.net.
Yes.
I wonder who has .com.
I have BrianLallyActor.com.
Well, you got dibs on that.
Yeah, I do. I purchased it.
Really?
It cost me a couple bucks.
$11?
Can I go Twitter on that?
No, Twitter's a totally different thing.
I know. Awesome. We were doing a bit.
We were.
Then you got serious.
I know.
No, Twitter's a totally different thing, man.
Yeah. What'd you have to hit Chucho's dad first?
Come on, man. I did hit Chucho's dad. So Ricardo asked me always why I hit Chucho's dad and Mi Familia.
Yeah.
Because that was the direction.
What did the director say in that movie?
He said, "You got to hit Chucho's dad."
Did he say when, or just at some point, surprise him? He doesn't know you're going to hit him.
That's what Ilya Kazan would do.
Yeah, he gave me the bendable
Billy Club,
and I hit him. I said, "I could use this one. I'll just pull back." That's what I said. No. So
you're like, I'll pull the punch.
Yeah.
But yeah, so follow us, rate us, and that's about it, right, for this week?
That's it.
Follow Adam on his website,
shootingthescript.com.
You guys had an extensive Batman
we
coverage.
Did. I think we're done with Batman for a little bit now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can take a break.
And Adam also reviews movies on
MoviePass.
MoviePass.
Blog.moviepass.com.
Yeah. Getting paid to review movies.
Not quite, but
a few shekels.
I'm Batman.
All right. Till next time, have a good week.